analysis by analysis. That's what you get from the other guys. But not here. Not now. Not ever. This is the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA, a deep look inside the game. The Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA is broadcasting live from McFadden's at the ballpark and is brought to you in part by SEPTA, BCWSA, Rob's Automotive, Vince Siriani and Contour Mortgage, Marriott Suites in Clearwater Beach, Harris Comfort, Penn Community Bank, McCaffrey Supermarkets, Peruzzi Auto Group, Keenan's in North Wildwood, and the Southern Ocean County Chamber of Commerce. We now go live to McFadden's at the ballpark for the Baseball Insider Show. Now, here are your hosts, Ricky Batalico and John Brazier.
All right, welcome to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA. I'm John Brazier, joined by former Phillies All-Star pitcher Ricky Batalico. How you doing?
I don't know. You didn't turn up my mic.
There you
now
go.
Now it's up.
All
what's
right.
going on?
All good?
Good, good. Can't complain.
We had a Grateful Dead night a couple days ago.
Yep.
And your boy Murph was in one of the Dancing Bear outfits.
Yeah, he was gratefully dead, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Murph.
You know what the best was?
And he had
was?
It on backwards.
Well, you know what the best was? The best was the, they do the round table. After, you ever listen to the round table?
Yeah.
They do it Friday night home game.
They must have killed him.
And they, it's all the guys, TV
have
and
I
radio
ever
guys.
To it? Was that a joke?
No, I don't know, because you're doing post game.
But I was doing the 12-10 thing before the Phillies
That's
left.
That's true. 12-10. That's true. So they all sit around and they just talk whatever. Usually they go off topic. They don't talk baseball for the first whatever, the 15 minutes, and then they get into it. Well, they talked about the Grateful Dead night. Now, obviously, it was Grateful Dead night. So they talked about Murph being in the suit. They talked about, I got a lot of heat because they know
So
I'm,
they crushed Murph in the suit.
They crushed him, yeah. But Jim Jackson just said, I don't quite understand the whole Grateful Dead era or reference. Jim just sounded like such a straight-laced, guy.
Well, John,
Dancing Bears. Chris Ermer wants to know why the Dancing Bears. Dancing Bears were actually on one of the albums, The History of the Grateful Dead, Volume 2. And
I really don't understand the Dancing Bears.
And so
can you
that bear became a symbol, and it's different colored bears. So, and some
Grateful
people
Dead
used to call
gone,
Jerry Garcia affectionately Papa Bear. So there you have it. All right, Rick, we got a great show planned for today. We will preview today's rubber match game between the Phillies and the Brewers. We're going to go around baseball, talk about some trades, and we'll do that with one of our guests. We're going to talk about history being made on the mound this week and at the plate around baseball. We're going to talk about a funeral that took place out in the outfield. Not sure if you heard about that.
Yes, I did.
An odd line score, and this is I can't wait to tell you this one, and I'll tell it later in the show, but a not well thought out tweet from a Chicago sports writer. Not sure if you saw that one, but absolutely an instant
you
classic.
You dig for this stuff. Unless I glaze over it and catch it, I won't know what you're talking about.
Exactly right. But as I mentioned, we're going to have several guests on the show. We're going to have two Scotts. We're going to have Scott Profrock, who's the assistant general manager for the Fightin' Phils. And Scott, we are 8 days away from the trade deadline.
Right.
So we can maybe see if we can get some stuff out of Scott. But if anything, we can talk about the minor league system. We can also talk about what goes through the process. What is it like being an assistant GM? What's it like being Matt Klentak? What's it like being a scout going on for the next 8 days? Because obviously this is the busiest time for them. And also, and talk about the process because, let's say we don't make any trades by Monday. Well, but let's say we don't make any trades.
There's still an opportunity.
Well, there's going to be a big-time opportunity because you have to get players through waivers. Well, Jeremy Hellickson is going to make it through waivers. Nobody's going to claim him because of his salary.
Yeah, but okay. I think that's one guy, but you look at Daniel Nava, you look at Howie Kendrick, you look Benoit.
Kendrick still has 3 points.
Neshek's going to go.
Well, Neshek's going to get traded. He almost has to be.
Yeah.
But Kendrick still has $3.3 million, so that's, and if they take him, then that's $3.3 million that's off the books of the Phillies.
Yeah, you have to wonder where the Phillies stand with Hellickson right now. I mean, I just feel like that one backfired in more ways than one. They thought about trading him at the deadline last year. He came up with injury right
but
before.
But the problem with trading at the deadline is that last year they still had the rule where we'd have to give compensation.
Right.
Give up a first-round draft pick. Or they'd have to give – whoever signed Hellickson would have to give up a first-round draft
pick. Right.
Now that rule has changed, so it's going to be easier for us to move Hellickson, but it doesn't make it easier when he pitches the way he did last night.
And I would assume that was a big one for him yesterday. I mean, that would be where you're getting all the scouts there.
Yep.
And if they judge him the way we saw him, it wasn't good.
Right. All right, we're also going to have another Scott on, Scott Brandeth. Scott Brandeth is our director of merchandise. He's our merch guru. He's going to set the table for what the second half looks like as far as giveaways. Now, today, there's a giveaway. Do you know what the giveaway is today, Rick?
No.
It is an Odubel Herrera performance T-shirt. It's actually really cool. It's one of those breathe-through T-shirts. You know, you wear.
It's not the bat flip.
It's not the bat flip.
No Odubel Herrera bat flip.
We are going to talk about Odubel Herrera because he is he's en fuego right now. But we're going to talk about we'll go through that. We are going to preview the great giveaways of the summer, and we will review the quick week in Phillies baseball. In fact, let's do that right now, Rick. Let's go through just kind of the week. Okay. We'll blow through, but I want to spend a particular amount of time on last night's game. So Monday, if you remember, the Phils played the Marlins. Marlins win in 10 innings. It was 6-5. And I tell you what, the guy that, you know, there's a lot of Phillies killers out there. We saw Ryan Braun last night.
Yeah.
But you know who's another Phillies killer? D. Gordon.
Yeah.
You know, Flash Gordon's son is coming back to haunt us.
I'll agree with that.
And I remember Flash Gordon, when D. Gordon was hanging around the clubhouse as a kid, Flash kept telling me and anybody who would, he would talk to is saying, my kid's going to be a good player. My kid's going to – and you always heard that, and you're like, all right, Dave. Well, all right, Flash, whatever, you know.
Flash.
And next thing you know, the kid not only becomes an all-star, but, again, he turns into a Phillies killer. So he you know, he got the RBI single with the bases loaded. Stanton, how about Stanton? He hits the whole home stand. He hits two home runs, drives in three runs that game, continues, you know, in the next series as well.
His home runs
game.
Are just a joke, too. I mean, it's – he's so strong that he doesn't even have to hit those mammoth ones that are up in the air.
Right.
He just kind of lines them out and, okay, home run.
Right.
And he doesn't even phase them.
No, he's such a big, big,
he's a
big,
beast.
Well, and the key part was, you know, Ty Kelly, who's kind of a generalist. He's not an outfielder. He's not an infielder. He's kind of a utility guy. But Derek Teacher hit a one-out triple off his glove. It's a shame that was in the 10th. But the good news is Nick Williams started showing the way what he can do. Hit a two-run double in the third that put Phils up 4-2.
Nick Williams had a nice little week he put together.
He did. Phils left the bases loaded in the eighth, but Nava struck out. Perkins had a great leap. And how about Perkins' catch? Did you see that one with the Herrera?
I did. When
there's a good and bad there. But, right?
Somebody should – I mean, somebody's got to call it.
Right.
But, I mean, that's in – you're in no man's land. You're sitting out in left center field. All you're thinking about is catching the baseball.
Right.
I mean, that's not one of those where there's a clean-cut winner of, I got it. But – that's a dangerous play.
Yep. All right, let's move to Tuesday real quick. Franco had three hits, so Franco actually has been swinging the bat as well. So it's nice to see after the All-Star break, Franco and Herrera, two guys that have really picked it up.
Two guys that have to pick it up.
Yeah, so he had three hits, including a tie-breaking home run in the eighth to give the Phils a 5-2 victory. As we mentioned, Stanton had another home run, and Nick Williams, again, to continue to do well, added a two-run home run in the ninth that really kind of broke it open. And it was off a lefty, and it was opposite field. I mean, that was a pretty impressive display right there.
Absolutely true. I mean, you know, these are guys, when you think about the guys that have to step it up on this team, those are the guys that got to get it done. I don't care. And the one thing, you look back to last week, Franco was hitting without moving his lower half.
Right.
On purpose, trying to stay inside the baseball.
Yep.
And that's carried over now.
Yep.
And now I think he's starting to say to himself, hey, I can hit home runs. I just don't have to swing for them.
Right.
And it's a whole different look at the game now. And I like what I've seen from lately. He's keeping his head down, which I think is, I guess, rule number one you follow from Little League.
Right. Well, but it's also like I there's so many similarities between golf and baseball, right?
Yeah.
Keeping the body still, keeping your head down when you're swinging.
Late explosion.
And let the ball do the work instead of just trying to overswing.
Right. Overswinging. In any sport. I mean, think about it. You play hockey, you overswing in hockey, what normally happens? Either you don't get your best shot on goal, or you don't have the accuracy.
Right.
It's the same thing with anything else. You swing harder, there's more tendency to do bad things.
Yep. But also a positive coming out of Tuesday, Velasquez. How about that? First start since May 30th, went six innings, pitched four hits, one earned run, one walk, four Ks. And
didn't his look pitch, like it was going to be that good.
Right, but his pitch count actually was very good compared to what he was doing in the past.
Which I think, I guess if you take anything out of that game, that's the one thing you want to take out of it, is that he doesn't have to strike people out, and he could last a little deeper in the games. Maybe going on the DL, maybe that helped him. Maybe he
cleared
started thinking, you know, here's what I have to do to become a better pitcher, because I think he's starting to say to himself, you know, we heard him say, well, sometimes I think of myself as a closer, but I'm sure somebody instilled in his mind, closers have to throw strikes too.
Right.
It's not like you go out there and walk everybody, because then you take yourself out of game two. So, I mean, to me, it's all about pitch counts.
Unless you're Mitch. No, I'm kidding.
It's all about pitch counts and knowledge of what type of pitcher you actually are.
Right. Yeah, that was definitely a good sign. All right, so Wednesday, that was a great one. Phils win with a season-high 20 hits. They go on to win 10-3. It was the first road series. They won a road series for only the third time this season. Nick Williams, continue to say his name, had two triples, two RBIs, became the fourth Philly since 1913 to have multiple hits and multiple RBIs in four consecutive games. And the other guy, Nava, who, you know, unfortunately got hurt, but he had four hits. Seven Phillies had at least two hits. And once again, Stan hit another home run, number 30. But again, going back to the Phillies, Galvis, Hernandez, all three hits, and Franco.
What did you think of Stanton's comments after that?
Well,
you heard what he said when when he said,
"Well,
this is bad when you lose to the worst team in baseball, two out of three.
You know,
it's bad."
What he said was not wrong. I mean, technically, but
I don't think he was wrong.
It kind of just made it seem like, I don't know, I'm not professional, or not, I don't know. What's the word?
That wasn't unprofessional.
No.
He was just saying
just
exactly how he felt.
He's frustrated.
I think those are words to try to get him out of there.
Right, or just to, I don't know.
Or somebody to move in.
Maybe motivate everybody on his team.
Look, it's not that easy being who he is on that team down there right now. And it can't be easy. I think, let's face it, he's probably looking for a change of scenery if he can get one.
Yep. All right, Friday, Phils go on win 6-1, as I mentioned, on Grateful Dead night, but I tell you what, the one who's really become the ace, and what really drives me crazy is when you say, well, this guy's a three, or this guy's a four, or this guy's not an ace. And people almost define, like, unless you're throwing like 100 miles an hour, people say they're not an ace. What is that?
An ace
is somebody that can lead a team and be basically a guy. You don't have to throw 100 miles an hour to be an ace.
I won't buy into that 100 mile an hour thing. You know what? We've seen a guy like DeGrom and Syndergaard and Harvey. What has happened to those guys?
Yeah, they get hurt.
Injuries. You know, you have to know how to pitch.
Right.
If you can't pitch, forget being a starting pitcher in this league. And you look at Nola.
Right.
I mean, he's throwing harder than he did last year, but regardless of the point, he's still using movement. He's using change of speeds.
And change up.
And then that nasty curveball he has. I mean, you put three-plus pitches together, I think it makes you a darn good pitcher.
Right. Yeah, so he threw seven innings, allowed one run, five hits, struck out nine.
Striking out a lot more lately.
It was, as you said, his velocity is up, but he's also, you know, using the changeup more.
Well, his changeup has come a long way because, I mean, when you think about it, he had that curveball. It's all going one way, though. He's got that curveball kind of going across to right-handers. He needed something that might come back down and in or down and away to a lefty, and the way to go is a changeup.
And in one stretch, he retired nine in a row, eight via strikeout.
Yeah, it's no joke.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, he's turned it. He's completely turned himself. If you remember when he first came up, he came onto the scene like gangbusters, throwing the ball extremely well, spotting, location was everything. Then he got injured, and in that time period, he was. I don't think people knew whether it was the injury or whether he just kind of lost the strike zone. But now he's gotten back to a point where he looks dominant.
When he
gets to the mound, and quite frankly, every fifth day, that I look forward to watching him pitch.
Well, and he had just faced Milwaukee, so they had just seen him, and he still dominated. So it was good to see.
Milwaukee will swing the bats,
right?
And he's got the deception pitches,
right,
which will sit Milwaukee right back down into the dugout.
Right, exactly right. From an offensive point of view, Freddie Galvis, how about that one? Absolutely crushed that ball.
Yeah, he did.
Two-run home run. We also had Tommy Joseph had the big two-run double. In the sixth, and then you have Nishik, who pitched a scoreless eighth.
No surprise there.
He has opened the season with 22 consecutive scoreless appearances at home. Since 1913, no Phillies reliever has started a season with a longer streak.
I mean, his numbers are sickening when you really think about it. I mean, he's one of those guys that just by the way he throws, his deception, it's so different than anybody else around the league that it makes it almost impossible to hit because – guys don't see anything like him. He's like a left-handed specialist as a right-handed pitcher.
Right.
That's the way I look at him.
All right, let's take a break here. Coming up on the show, we're going to bring Scott Profrock on. Scott is the assistant general manager for the Phils. We'll get a little, as the trade deadline comes up in 8 days, we'll get a little, see if we can get some info out of him, get some dirt out of Scott Profrock. But more importantly, we'll get the process and what goes on up in the offices up there in baseball operations. You're listening to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. We are live from McFadden's.
Hey, what's up? This is Adam Sandler, and you're listening to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA with my good man, John Brazier. My grandma used to have a crush on him, and my grandma, she had really bad gas. We used to call her Tootie. And co-host Ricky Vitalico. And you can squeeze him, too. Shibby-doo. Hee-hoo!
All right, we are back at the Baseball Insider Show presented by Seth. We are live from McFadden's. I'm Ricky Vitalico, and we got Scott Proprock, assistant general manager of the Fighting Phils. How you doing, Scott?
Doing good, John. I wish I was dressed as comfortably as Ricky is, though.
There you go.
You know, that's the best way to come to work.
Summer dress today.
Absolutely. Pretty good, Rick. Yeah.
Absolutely.
See, I figured last time he was actually on doing the running from here to the pregame.
So I was dressed up.
You were still dressed like that, and you had your
I had
your
my suit stuff ready to go
over
yeah.
there. Now, do you wear?
Superman.
Do you wear pants? But do you wear? You could wear shorts technically
in the booth anymore.
Right?
We're not supposed to anymore.
Really?
So we kind of run in there, throw some pants on, throw a shirt on, and go.
All right. But in the past, though, you
But it's a little easier now because we got rid of the ties, so it makes it a little easier on us.
All right. Good.
Superman into the phone booth.
There you go.
But we don't have phone booths anymore.
Do they have phone booths? I was going to say, they don't have phone booths anymore.
They don't. England, I think they still have some over there. All right. Scott Proprock. Now, this is obviously a week from tomorrow. It's a trade deadline, 4 p.m., right? But also, people forget if something doesn't happen by then, there's still people can go through waivers.
Correct.
And some of the bigger trades have happened. And that trade deadline is August 31st.
Right. Well, it's not really. I mean, you could still trade players
right, but they can't
into
be,
September, but it's the playoff eligibility right. that's important by the end of August.
So tell the listeners what you guys go through right now. Obviously, it's very busy, but between not just you and Matt and everybody, but the scouts and everybody, because a lot of people just think it's Matt that's crazy busy or you guys.
Well, he is.
But you've got all other ones too that are obviously right. feeding him the information.
Right. I mean, and again, with our analytics department there and all the information that's available from TrackMan and StatCast, they're lining up a lot of that information. Mike Ondo and his staff are bringing in the subjective scouting opinions, and they're working on bringing it together and presenting it to Matt for him to make the ultimate decision. So,
how long does an actual one player trade take? Well, I shouldn't say one player, one for one.
Well, I mean, again, a lot of these discussions, people have been putting feelers out, for a while. They've known, probably most teams take the first 40 games to evaluate their club, and then they make the next 40 games to sort of search out as to what's available out there, and we're about that point where it's time to pull the trigger on something. And so I think a lot of teams have put feelers out. Obviously, from our situation, I mean, the acquisitions that we made, Saunders, Neshek, Benoit, and a guy like Daniel Nava, Buchholz, those guys were all, not only to provide us, with some, more competitive, players, but also some possibilities for guys to trade when some of the younger players are ready to, to step up and play at the major leagues. Obviously, in some cases, it hasn't worked out, as well as we would have liked it to. But, in Neshek's case, he's a pretty, valuable commodity right now.
And I would think, too, that you mentioned Nava, assuming he's healthy, that, he might not be the biggest name. He's 34 years old. He's, he's basically a utility player at this point. But I would think Nava would be a very important, could be a very important piece to a team that maybe is looking for someone that to be that special, someone's been right. on a World Series team. Not that you're going to get a lot
him. But he goes in a combination in a deal with somebody and helps us get a little bit better prospect or that sort of thing. But yeah, he's from spring training, from the start of spring training, he's probably had consistently the best at bats
right.
of any when he gets the opportunity of any player on our club.
All right, if you were a GM from another team and Howie Kendrick, who had a very good season, but he's been injury prone, obviously. How would you look at that from your team perspective? Let's say you needed somebody, either an outfielder or a second baseman. Would you be scared off by his injury?
No, because I think Howie's a professional hitter. I mean, he showed that the other night. He had four at bats in Reading the night before, and those were the first four at bats he'd had in 2 weeks. And the guy's throwing 97 or whatever it was, and he shoots the ball right back up the middle like he
right.
And so I don't think there's any issue at all with him and his ability to hit. He's a professional hitter, and the power's not great, He has some versatility. He can play all over the place. He's not a great defender, but, I mean, I think he's a guy that, whether it's an American League club or a National League club, depending upon, you know, maybe he could be a DH for the American League or, you know, but in the National League you can double switch with him. I don't think anybody's necessarily going to require him to be an everyday player, but he'd be an excellent addition with his versatility,
right,
you know, to a contender and his ability, you know, to come off the bench and hit.
All right, well, there's been talk, I know you're going to say you know, about Giancarlo Stanton and Christian Yelich. Would the Phillies be interested in both or one of those guys or none of the above?
Well, you know, there are other teams' players, so we can't talk about them. But
right,
globally, you know, as you're sitting around, you know, thinking about not only this year, as obviously that's, you know, we're in the situation we're in. But, you know, going forward, you know, you're looking at other team situations and what players they may have that are, you know, available for whatever reason. You know, obviously that particular situation, there's an ownership change and who knows what the dynamics of that may be, you know, going forward, and whether that makes, you know, certain players available or unavailable is probably yet to be determined by who buys, you know, ends
right
up with the club. But it, just in general, you know, that's certainly one of the things we will look at. You know, I mean, the free agent market is what it is next year. It's not great. There's some players out there, but we've got to look at other opportunities, you know, to flex our financial muscle. And maybe that's a way to do it with, you know, a team that has a player that's a moneyed player that they want to, you know, move. And we can use that financial ability we have to say, okay, we may take this player off you, but we're not, and, you know, there's a lot of money to it, but we're not necessarily going to have to give up, you know, a wealth of prospects.
Right.
I mean, and then I'm talking globally. I'm not talking
yeah
any specific situation, but those are things we sit around and, you know, and look at, you know, multiple teams that have those types of scenarios and as a way to try to get, you know, valuable pieces that, you know, somebody else may not feel is a fit for them with whatever their situation going forward is.
A lot of people are talking about after 2018, again, not talking about specific players, but using these guys as an example. You got Machado and Harper are two of the guys that are going to be available after 2018. But if the Nationals or the Orioles don't, if they let them go to free agency, they're not, with the new rules, they're not getting any compensation back, right? So,
well, no, they can make a qualifying offer, and they'll still get, I mean, their compensation rules have changed,
right,
but they're still eligible for some compensation. It just may not be as good
as
depending
good
on a number of different factors from the standpoint of, you know, whether they're a revenue-sharing payee or whether they're over the luxury tax and those sorts of things.
But would that, because of that change, would that, if you were the Orioles or Nationals, wouldn't you try to move them next year so you can get more,
you know,
probably out of it as opposed to getting whatever you're getting,
I mean,
compensation
again,
back?
You know, in those specific, both those specific situations, I mean,
unless obviously you're going to try to resign him.
Well, I mean, again, I would think that's certainly in the realm of possibilities for him, but, you know, they also have to make the decision whether, you know, and again, it's somewhat similar to what we went through. I mean, you know, you go back, you know, everybody says we should have, you know, started the rebuild right after 2011, which is ridiculous.
Right.
Right.
You know, but, you know, in 2012, you know, we were 14 games under 500 without Utley and Howard. And then when they came back, we were 14 games over 500 the second half of the year. So, okay, you think 2013, you know, maybe this is one last...
A flash.
One last run. They're both healthy, and then they weren't healthy.
Right.
Halliday got hurt. You know, so, again, you may look at what your window is,
right,
and say, you know, let's go for it. And then you don't try to move it.
I got to tell you, I'm not one of those people who put any blame on you guys when you did what you did. I look at that situation, it's like, well, we have a core here. Let's go for something. Let's try to win here. It wasn't about rebuilding back then.
No.
And you know what? You kept Ryan as long as you can. It was a familiarity on the team.
Right. And then, you know, I mean, again, you know, I'm sure we made mistakes along the way, and you know, things certainly didn't work out the way we planned, but again, you know, to think that we should have, you know, torn the team up that won 102 games right after we
right
did is ludicrous. So, but, you know, anyway, that's water under the bridge. But just speaking to what other teams are thinking about, you know, I can't tell you that. But those teams may say, you know, look, We got them this year and next year. This is our window. We're gonna go. You know, we're gonna give it our best shot. So
all right, let's switch gears. The minor league system. J.P. Crawford got off to a very tough start. He gets injured right after coming off the DL. He's been just completely on fire. I mean, even last night, I think he had three or four hits.
Yeah, he had four hits last night.
Four hits.
And again, I mean, I think I've said this to you guys before, but the best wisdom I've ever been imparted to me with regards to hitters in the minor leagues is by Hal McCray when I was with the Rays, and we were talking about Delmon Young, who was just absolutely tearing up the South Atlantic League as he was 18 at the time. And, you know, we're talking about, should we move him? And he said, just leave him be. They need to struggle at a level where they can get out of it.
Right.
Because if you just keep moving them up every time they're doing good and they never struggle, they get to the major leagues and they struggle, they're screwed, excuse me. I mean, because they don't know they don't have the confidence to know, okay, this has happened to me before.
Right.
I can work my way out of it.
Right.
And then, you know, they're at a level that, you know, if somebody finds a hole, you know, Ricky, if somebody finds a hole, you know, then they're going to exploit it. And if they don't know how to make that adjustment and haven't done it before, I mean, that's a huge hurdle to overcome. So, you know, when you look at JP, got off to a rough start, and now he's made an adjustment. Well, the opposite, you could look at Hoskins, got off to a really hot start. He struggled the last month, but the last two nights, I mean, I think he was hitting .160 for the first 3 weeks of the month. Well, he got two hits the night before, and he got three hits last night. So when they know they can do it, you know, their 0-for-20 is not the end of the world, and they can bounce out of it. That's a great thing to happen to him. So we don't have to be in any rush with any of these guys. You know, certainly we'd like to be playing better at the major league level. But the most important thing is with any of these guys, and look at Nick Williams. He spent a year and a half in AAA. Is for when they get here, for them to be ready to stay here. And that's, I think, what our goal is in the minor
league. And it's funny you brought up the failure and then being able to get yourself back to normal, because a guy on the team right now who does it, that I find very refreshing, is Aaron Altherr.
Yeah,
anytime he's been into a slump, you look at his slumps, they last for 4 days, and then he's right back to normal.
Yep. You know, and I think, and again, you know, the one thing about him is, you know, he probably struggled at the major league level more than he struggled at the minor league level, but a lot of his were injury situations.
Right.
And, you know, maybe he came back too fast, or we tried to get him back too fast, or he wasn't 100%, whatever. But, you know, I'll tell you a little story. I mean, and again, you got to have the willingness of the player to listen and be open to situations. But this off season, when he got to spring training with Stairsy, you know, he said, "Look, you know, I'm open to anything you can suggest to me." And he took to it. He stayed with it, and obviously the results are showing. So there's got to also be that aspect to it. And again, when they do struggle, then maybe they are open to, you get a coachable moment or whatever you want to call it. I mean, that
which is always nice to have players that are interested in that.
And do you think, too, like with Nick Williams, and again, this is my, not theory, but, you know, I think when people said he wasn't maybe in the minor leagues, his issue might be he wasn't disciplined at the plate. If they get the opportunity in the majors and they know they've got it, you know, they don't want to lose that window. They don't want to lose that opportunity because they don't know how long they're going to be up here. That almost like forces them, and I'm using Nick as an example. It forces them to basically really concentrate on what they might lack or what they might have to work on. So in other words, I guess what I'm saying is some guys are better when they get to the majors because it forces them to basically really bear down and as opposed to just kind of trying to impress too much down in the minor leagues.
Right. And, you know, and again, in Nick's case, I think he was disappointed last year. You know, they didn't get a call-up at the end of the season. There were a number of reasons why. But, I think he's grown up a lot, matured a lot, and he is, you know, busting his tail, you know, since he's been up here. And he's, you know, again, I think I've said this to you guys before, you know, we had a scout with the Braves, Ralph Garr, who, you know, always would tell me, you know, or tell us, you know, about amateur players. He said, you know, I think I can tell you who I think is going to play in the major leagues, but I can't tell you what they're going to be when they get there.
Right.
Because when they get there, they seek their own level.
Right.
And Nick is a guy that, you know, you know, so far anyway, looks determined, you know, to stay here and to continue to improve. So,
well, I got to tell you that obviously I work for the Phillies, so, but
really?
I've checked the minor league system more this year than I think I ever have in the 24 years, and every night it'll be usually during our game, I'll check in on the box score and I'll go all the way down through Williamsport, and it's just really exciting to see how guys, like whether it's Sixto Sanchez or seeing guys at Lee Branch or seeing just following in every level, there's fun guys to really watch. Now, again, whether are these guys all going to pan out? I don't know, but it is fun to see that, again, not just that you always hear about the Kingerys and the Hoskins and the
right,
and the
right.
Cousins, but if you go down there and see here the Medinas and the
there's
the,
a lot more.
There's a lot more, yeah. And it's a lot
of
fun to follow.
I can answer your question: are they all going to pan out? And then
no,
answer
yeah,
that
right,
answer
we know
is
that.
A definite no.
Right, but it's a numbers game.
But,
so,
but I will tell you this: I've been in through this process with other organizations, whether it's the Orioles or the Rays, and even the Braves when I first got there. I think this organization, we may not have the, you know, the next Bryce Harper or whatever, but the depth of talent that we have, the quantity, and it's good quality too. It's not great quality, but it's good quality. And we've got a chance to be surprised by some of them. That's why they're prospects. But the depth of talent that we have is as good as any place I've been. And that, you know, when with the financial resources that we have,
yep.
The impending free agent market, who knows who gets out there, whatever. But we have the resources to supplement the talent that we have with, you know, the big ones that all clubs need, to get to, you know, the promised land. So.
I'm going to put you on the spot, and then we'll let you go. One minor leaguer underrated that you're most excited about. So not it can't be someone like a Kingery or a Cousins,
right.
Or even a Sixto Sanchez is out of the equation. He's getting a lot of attention.
Right.
But maybe an underrated minor leaguer that you are most excited to
follow. A diamond in the rough?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be rough. Diamond in the semi-rough.
Let's see. I'm trying to think. I know most of these guys are names that you've heard. Well, I mean, the kid that's been, I think, most impressive that's the furthest away is the Ortiz kid in Williamsport.
Oh, yeah, Jaleel?
Yeah. I mean, all reports are he's a big young man. I'm not saying he's a man yet, because I think he's only 17, maybe he's 18 now, but he's playing in the short season A in Williamsport, and, you know, every time I listen to the game report, I mean, he's making athletic plays in the outfield, which
right.
is, you know, if you've seen him, is, you know, a little bit of surprise, because he's a big man, and he's, you know, his at bats and his approach and his maturity. I mean, everything you hear about him is very positive. So he's a long ways away, but he'd be a guy that I think.
Well, I remember when we signed him down in Clearwater. On one of those practice fields, or one of the, I don't know if it was Schmidt or Atfern Field, he hit one into the trees.
Yeah.
He's it was got like one of the longest home runs down there.
Heard his power there. Is tremendous.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and that was one of the bigger international signings.
Yep.
Right?
He
was like
I think it's the most we've ever given an international player.
Right.
But he's a guy that, maybe he is one of those guys. Maybe
right.
he is, you know, one of the horses that you need. So.
Yeah, knocking wood.
But,
all right. Well, we know you're busy because you're gonna have your hands full in the next 8 days and really the next 2 months. So,
yeah, he's probably saying, why is John keeping me so long right now?
So, Scott, really appreciate you coming on the show.
No problem,
thank
John.
You.
Thank you.
Great.
Thanks, Scott
Profrock. All right, coming
you.
Up on the show, we will have another Scott. We're going to have Scott Brandreth to tell us what the second half of giveaways looks like, including a Pete Rose bobblehead doll, which really does look like Pete Rose. I mean, it's a great item. You're listening to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. We are live from McFadden's.
Hi, this is Christopher Walken. Paralysis by analysis. That's what you get from the other baseball guys. This is the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA with Philly's Director of Fun and Games, John Brazier, and co-host Ricky Batalico. Ask John about the time him and I served in the war. We were in the great Battle of the Bands of 1985 between Scritti Politti and Rat. Two people got stabbed, and John saved my life. I salute you, John.
All right, we are back to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. We are live from McFadden's. That was Christopher Walken saluting me for intervening in the Rats.
Seems to like
Scritti,
you a lot, John.
Scritti Politti, Battle of the Bands thing. We got Ricky Batalico. We went from Scott Profrock to another Scott. We got Scott Brandreth. And Scott Brandreth is the director of merchandise. He is the guru of merchandise, the guru of giveaways. And he's even brought some stuff here. And I wanted to bring him on to talk about, this is basically the second half, and it's a little further than the second half, but we've had some great giveaways and even some theme night giveaways, and we're going to bring on Scott Brandreth right now to talk about what's coming up, including, man, we got a lot of good stuff, including this. We're looking at a Pete Rose bobblehead.
You got to go to the Pete Rose, because I will tell you this much, that looks exactly like
it. It really does. All right, Scott, what do we got this second half?
Well,
first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Well, first of all, to jump right to the Pete Rose, I've been doing bobbleheads since 2001, and you know, you try to get it to look the best you can, the face, but Pete's face, for some reason, is really translates well to
a
bobblehead.
It is spot on. It really is.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. So
the batting stance is unbelievable.
Yep. Yeah, he had the crouch, the signature crouch. He had the one batting glove. Ironically, he didn't have a batting glove on his bottom hand, which is kind of weird. Different pictures had different things, but that is accurate. So that is our Toyota Pete Rose bobble figurine on Friday, August 11th. So all fans will get that. That'll be kicking off our alumni weekend.
Right, and that whole weekend, too, you've got – so that's Friday.
Yep.
Right, Saturday is actually the Wall of Fame ceremony.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, that'll be – Pete will go in pregame, you know, nice half-hour ceremony prior to the game with all the Wall of Famers are going to be coming back, or the ones that we can get.
A lot of early 80s players, I take.
Yeah,
back.
It'll be we usually kind of slant the guest list toward the inductees, so there'll be a bunch of his teammates from his era from 79 to 83 here with us. So that'll be a cool ceremony prior to the game on Saturday. And then we'll actually be doing a print for all fans for that game. And then Sunday we'll wrap up the weekend with our Toyota Phillies Alumni Day, and that's kind of when we bring all the local alumni. Will Ricky Batalico be on the line?
I am working.
Okay. I've
been there, done it.
Right, yeah. So all the guys from the ceremony from the night before, and then any local guys, local alumni that are here, it's kind of a cool thing where probably about 40, 50 alumni are on the third base line, and then our current players line up on the first base line for the anthem. And then they kind of get together at the end of the anthem. And this year it might be kind of weird or kind of really cool that Mark Leiter Sr. will be walking over to
his dad.
To his,
all right.
Yeah. So there'll be a Leiter and a Leiter shaking hands
after
the anthem. So that's kind of cool.
So and Pete Rose is going to be a big hit, obviously. You know, there's a lot of people that, and rightfully so, he was a missing piece for the Phillies to win the World Series in 1980. The story I love, though, and I hope we're going to hear this over the weekend, I'm assuming Bob Boone's going to be coming in.
Yep.
He has to be coming in, right?
He'll be here. Yeah, he's a Wall of Famer, so he'll be here.
So
yeah.
Bob Boone tells a story that when everyone says, hey, Bob, you know, I guess you got to be thankful for Pete Rose for saving your bacon, you know, when you drop the ball. And he gets really upset at that. And Bob says, you know what? I was the one that was not, you know, I was basically should have been the backup to Pete. That right. was Pete's ball. Pete right. can see that front. I had to flip off a mask then look from behind. Pete was coming in from first base. He had a clear view of it.
Are you saying there's going to be a fight?
Well, no. So Bob Boone loves the story. He said, so I'm going towards it. I'm like, where's Pete? Where's Pete? Where's Pete? Where's Pete? I don't see Pete coming. He's like, oh, my God, I got to go get it. So he, you know, sticks his glove out of the last second, you know, and then it goes off his glove, and Pete comes in to save the day. He catches it. Mm-hmm. So Pete and Bob's mind.
Right.
Pete was the one who messed up.
Charlie hustle my.
Yeah, then that's what he says. He says, yeah. Charlie hustle my butt or something worse. So.
Well, it was funny. We were talking in a meeting the other day about, you know, we go through who's going to unveil the plaque, who's going to give the replica plaque to the honoree, who's going to introduce him, who's going to give him the jersey. And one of the ideas was we'll have Booney come over to kind of give him the jersey and then drop it. And then Pete like grabs it and puts it on himself. So,
and Booney, is Booney okay with that?
we haven't presented.
We
haven't presented it to Booney.
I don't know how big that's going to go.
It's purely hypothetical.
I think based on that last story, you might want to present that.
I'm not going to ask Booney to do it.
Get an intern to do it.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
All right. So what else, what do we have? That's the weekend of August 11th, 12th, 13th. Or
correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah.
So Friday. Then what do we have chronologically? What do we have coming up?
Well, actually, this week I'll talk real quick. Starting tomorrow, we still have what? Nine, there's six games left on this homestand, right?
Yep.
Seven.
No, we had through Monday.
Seven, yeah, it's a wraparound.
By the way, the giveaway today is, I love it.
Yeah, so this is, thanks to Pico, this is our El Torito, our T-shirt. Actually, it's a performance T-shirt.
Yep.
It's one of those lightweight things. So all kids 14 and under will get this number 37.
And it says Phillies on the front, and it has the El Torito
the horns,
hand
yeah.
gesture on both the yep. P and the over yep. the S.
Yep. O doubles.
And on the back.
And O double just happened to go, four for four last night?
He did.
Yeah.
Prior to his
he was only one for three in bat flips, though.
Right, well.
And then we also have theme nights. Now, theme nights, so people understand, that's something you go through the theme nights page.
Correct.
And more people are becoming attuned to this because you should be aware of this because this is how the Grateful Dead, for the first 3,000 fans, got a Grateful Dead shirt. Monday, we have Billy Joel bobblehead doll. Now not every fan that comes through the gates. You have to order tickets through the Phillies theme nights page.
Correct.
And then you can not only get a discounted ticket, but again, if you're one of the first... And so we changed the number, but
right.
I think it's 3,000 for Billy Joel. You get an awesome bobblehead doll.
Yes, and that's very, very good to point out. You have to buy it through the theme nights page. It's a limited number of gifts that we give to people. So if you buy it through that page, you get a coupon with your ticket, and you go redeem it. And tomorrow night will be a Billy Joel bobblehead where he's performing at Citizens Bank Park. He's going to have his sixth sellout coming up in September. So.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and actually tomorrow night Billy. We have his guitarist. I think his name's Mike Del Guidici. Is doing the national anthem.
Right.
Now, how cool is this? And this is becoming a trend these days in rock as bands are getting older, that this guy was in a cover band called Big Shot out of Long Island and played in this cover band for years. And he was so good at imitating Billy Joel and obviously very good guitarist.
That Billy Joel
found out about it and hired the guy not only as his guitarist but also as his, I guess, co-vocalist or, you know, helps out. So it's pretty cool. All right, Scott, you have time to stick around for the last segment?
Absolutely.
All right, Scott's going to stick around. We'll talk about a little more giveaways, and I'm going to go around baseball and talk about some of the odd stories that I'm sure Scott can help out with. You're listening to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA. We are live from McFadden's.
Hey, what's going on? This is Tom Arnold. I like large women and painkillers. Make sure to watch and listen to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA each Sunday night right here on 1490 WBCB and at WBCB1490.com. And call your sponsor because you got a problem.
All right, we are back to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA live from McFadden's. That was Tom Arnold. And we have Ricky Vitalico here. We have Scott Brandeth here.
Roseanne doesn't do one for
us. Yeah, I guess Roseanne won't do one. Scott, tell us real quick a couple others because we're going to jump around baseball. So what else do we have coming up? Well, I'm looking at a Fanatic bobble belly.
Yes, a week from today, Community Energy Fanatic Solar Bobble Body. So it's not exactly a bobblehead. It's a different material, and the head stays still, but due to solar energy, the Fanatic perpetually rocks back and forth. So we've never done it. It's kind of a neat thing. So that's for kids 14 and under on next Sunday, July 30th.
And then we got an alarm clock here?
Yeah, back to school. Let's talk back to school. Kids love to talk back to school. So.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So August 27th, Sunday, August 27th, thanks to ShopRite. It's your old school alarm clock. We kind of stole the... It's the Fanatic instead of the Mickey Mouse with his arms going back and forth as the hands of the clock, and it's got the old-time ring. So that'll be getting kids ready to go back to school just in time.
Old school. I like it.
Old school, yes.
I like it.
So that's a cool kind of old school game.
All
again,
right.
Kids 14 and under on August 27th.
All right. Well, let's go. You ready to go around baseball?
Sure.
Let's do this.
With Ricky Bo.
Sure.
All right. Did you know that Carlos Beltran, he hadn't used his glove in more than 2 months? So on Monday, the Astros gathered around their teammate in center field, and they laid his mitt to rest. They all wore black shirts. Brian McCann was the officiant. He officiated the funeral. They had fake tombstones on there. Beltran played 77 times this season, and all but nine as a DH. He hadn't been in the field since May 16th, so they held a little funeral.
Wow.
What do you think of that, Ricky Bo?
If I'm not wrong, he played the field a couple days later.
He did.
Yeah, right. Well, that's...
So they had to get... Yeah, they...
What'd they have to do?
He was
dig
resurrected.
It up?
He was resurrected.
That's just... I mean, it's all fun and games. I mean, especially the way that team's playing. They could do
keeps
whatever
it loose,
they want.
And that's fun to keep it loose.
Yeah, it is.
And last year, you obviously had Joe Maddon keeping it loose with the Cubs.
But if you're a baseball player, shouldn't you have a mitt? Shouldn't you actually play baseball?
Do you know how many mitts are in there?
No. He's saying the DH.
Oh, DHs? I hate the DH.
I mean, come on. Yeah. Play the game.
I hate all the right. DH.
Ryan Zimmerman hit a franchise record 235th home run passing Vlad
Okay. So my question to you guys is, without spending too much time, because we don't have time to think, you got to do top of mind. Can you tell me the three other active players that are the all-time franchise leader in home runs? Okay. And because we're not going to have time to think, you might want to think about like what team we're playing right now.
Ryan Braun.
Ryan Braun, right. A guy that we talked about in the show who's very big, has hit mammoth home runs in our division.
Giancarlo Stanton.
Stanton. And then the fourth one.
Goldschmidt.
No, we played him in the World Series.
Evan Longoria.
Evan Longoria. So,
really?
Yeah.
I
that?
Guess you're right.
And you know who's, if you just stay within our league, and again, franchise, okay, so obviously you know the Phillies, Mike Schmidt. Atlanta Braves, should be easy.
Hank Aaron.
We already have Zimmerman. We already said Stanton. How about the Mets? This might surprise you a little bit.
Oh, is it
Hojo?
No.
Is it Rusty Staub?
All right, think of fruit.
Strawberry.
Daryl Strawberry.
Daryl Strawberry.
All right, how about this one? This is one of my favorite ones. I don't know who this guy is, but I'm assuming he is a sports writer. But a guy named Tony Andracki tweeted in Chicago. This is his tweet. Okay, this is when you should be reading your tweets. You should be proofreading your own tweets. Okay, so obviously the Cubs just acquired Jose Quintana in a trade, right, from the White Sox. So this guy tweeted, Jose Quintana took LSD to work today and said he wasn't even sure where the player's entrance was to Wrigley. Okay,
you know what? I know what it means.
LSD refers to Lakeshore Drive. Yep. But the way it reads right there, it looks like he had another reason why he couldn't figure out where the player's entrance was to Wrigley.
That is awful.
Outstanding.
Right? So,
outstanding.
All right, how about this one? We talked about the Marlins. Jorge Mas, he's a potential new owner of the Marlins. His dad was an anti-Castro political activist who escaped Cuba in 1960. The guy grew up in Miami, and as a middle infielder, you know who his head coach? It was Jim Hendry, former GM of the Cubs and now special assistant with the Yanks. So this guy... he made his money by digging trenches and laying telecommunication cables in South Florida. Now he's a billionaire, and it looks like he's going to be the owner. There's a lot of talk between.
I'm going to go dig trenches.
So you got to start.
Somewhere, right?
Switching sports, but did you know what's happening tonight at 8 o'clock on the Discovery Channel?
The shark, right?
Michael Phelps is racing a shark. It's 100 meters in open water. They're not side by side, obviously.
How is that going?
I don't know. I don't know how they're doing it. Like, they said they're not side by side. They got trained divers in the water to make sure that all went well. And a Westchester University biology professor named Frank Fish. That's his name, Frank Fish. So if you're a biology professor, I guess that's a good name for it. He said Michael Phelps is going to get ripped. So can Michael Phelps beat the shark?
No. That's unbelievable.
That's impossible.
Is he getting a head start, or is he? He actually Phelps is wearing like
a fin, special fin,
like a.
There's no chance.
What advantage does a shark have then? Huh? Does a shark get like some special treatment?
I don't think the shark needs any advantages.
Yeah, you're right.
It's a shark.
All right. On Friday night.
But how do you make the shark go?
Could you imagine they had
what
the
if
race?
He just wants to eat Phelps. He's going to go eat Phelps.
That would be make for good reality TV, I guess, unless you're Phelps or.
He can't jump over the lane, line and.
Lane violation? All right, and on Friday night,
maybe the dumbest thing I've ever
with his
heard.
With his ninth strikeout, Chris Sale notches 200th strikeout in his 20th start against he joined Randy Johnson, Pedro, and Nolan Ryan. How about that company right there?
Pretty good
so,
company.
Yeah, he's got his 200th K in his 20th start. Again, there's only three other pitchers that have ever done that.
That's ridiculous.
But he did it faster because he did it in 141 and a third innings. Randy Johnson did it in 143, Pedro 147, Nolan Ryan more. So pretty unbelievable. Chris Sale, we keep thinking about Kershaw and some of the other guys, Scherzer, but we might be looking at one of the great pitchers of all time. So far, he's still young in his career. And that wraps up today's Baseball Insider Show presented by Sept. I'd like to thank my co-hosts today, Ricky Botalco, our on-site engineer, Chris Ermer, WBCB Program Director, Bob Giaquinto. Our guest today, we had Scott Brandreth, Scott Profrock, back in the studio, the great Ted Efall. We'll be back next Sunday for a post-game show following the 135 game versus the Braves here at McFadden. Stay tuned for Phillies on Deck with Jim Jackson. And have a great week. And as the late, great Harry the K says,
we are out of here.
You've been listening to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA, an exclusive presentation of 1490 AM WBCB, and heard around the world at WBCB1490.com.